Friday edition of the Chris Raby Show, Scoops with DannyMack.com, Friday, February 5th, 2021. We're going to talk some football. Coming up, we'll get ready for the Super Bowl. Aaron Schatz, the creator of DVOA and the man behind Football Outsiders, is going to join me. We'll get his take on the game, ask him a couple questions about some props, maybe some other stuff. Football talk with Aaron Schatz coming up. Basketball in a moment. Jarrett Sutton, former Mizzou player, now a scout for the Pelicans, is going to be with me, and he's a KC guy, so we'll talk about the Chiefs and ask Jarrett how he's feeling about Sunday. Don't forget to subscribe to the Scoops with Danny Mac podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can then leave a review, take a screenshot, and hit me up on Twitter, C-H-R-A-B-E, C-H-R-A-B-E. You can also email me, Chris, at scoopswithdannymac.com. Let's get to some basketball. We'll also talk a little football with Jarrett Sutton, the KC native and former Mizzou player, now scout for the New Orleans Pelicans. Always love talking to Jarrett, whether it's at a basketball game or, I don't know, on the dance floor at a wedding or here on the Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMack.com. What's going on, man? We've got to talk hoops, but we've got to talk your Chiefs a little bit as well. You excited for Sunday? I guess Chiefs fans can't really get nervous at this point about anything, can they?
I guess. I don't know. I don't want to speak too soon on that. I'll be nervous on Sunday. I'm not nervous right now. I definitely feel a lot better than I did last year is as far as nerves, for sure. It's good to have one under your belt, and I'm just
because you're a Garoppolo guy instead of Brady.
That's right. You know, it's just wild to, you know, be here, just being, you know, lifelong Chiefs fan, and now we're, you know, in the Super Bowl again, looking to run it back for a second consecutive Super Bowl title. And I mean, this town is just geeking out over Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Andy Reid and the Chiefs, and it's just taken this town by storm. So it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to Sunday. I feel good about it, and you know, I just feel like the performance we had against Buffalo was finally the statement I think everybody was looking for.
Yeah, it's so, I think, fun to think about some of the great sports cities, and Buffalo is one of them with the Bills, but cities that, like, you know, KC is a Chiefs city. Chicago is a Bears city. Buffalo is a Bills city. St. Louis is a Cardinals city. And when you've got one of those teams rolling, there's nothing like it, man. You know, that there is absolutely nothing like it.
Yeah, I think it's what makes, you know, being a, you know, living in the Midwest and being a big time sports fan. And I know St. Louis, you know, folks would say the same thing. I mean, you kind of not live and die, but you're just so ingrained in your team, especially when you're, there is nothing like it when you have a player like Patrick Mahomes, right? I mean, just a superstar talent, a player that's going to really transform the position. He already has, really, and he's still 25 years old. And, you know, in football, you know, you got to have the quarterback position right, and you want to have your quarterback locked down long term. And the fact we were able to lock him down before this season started, and Brett Veach did such a great job of keeping players here to run this back this year. And you know, I think that's what gets everybody so excited, is that there's the continuity there. You know, fans know these players now. They're so intertwined with watching these players. These players are out in the community everywhere. Kansas City's a big-time charitable town. There's so many different organizations to get a part of. And Travis Kelce as Walter Payton Man of the Year, a nominee for that. And everything that's gone on with fans getting behind that has been really cool to see as well. So it's a great time to be in Kansas City. It's a town that's really building and blossoming, and at the right time here with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs going on this run.
Jarrett Sutton is with us, former Mizzou hooper, New Orleans Pelicans scout. You know, it's easy to do the Mahomes Steph Curry comp because of the way that they make plays, and you say, what, he's not supposed to be able to do that from there, the fact that they're both just dominant. But I was trying to think of before Curry, like Jack Flaherty and I were going over 90s players the other day. And if you set aside their size, do you see any like T-Mac in Mahomes and what he does for the position, the versatility, the way he's kind of changing how we think of a traditional running quarterback or how we think of a traditional passing quarterback?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good comp.
I was trying to think of other ones too.
Yeah, the Steph Curry one is always the one I draw attention to. I think that with Patrick, he's got the mentality that Steph has, you know, on and off the competitive field or court. I mean, he's a very humble dude. I mean, he is a team-centered guy. He puts the team first. So I think it's not just the skill on the field. I think it's everything he's about as a leader. And he's done it so suddenly too and so early. And he's continuing to just keeping it, like, evolving, I guess, is the word I would say. He just keeps getting better and better. And there's the competitiveness too. I mean, Steph's a competitor. Patrick is a competitor. And they do it in the right ways. It seems like they're always under control. They have a great pulse of their locker room. You know, the coaches, it's a coaching dream to have a player like them, because they can fix so many things, right? They can kind of cover up a lot of things and holes that you might have. I mean, you look at that Chiefs run in Patrick's first year as a starter when he threw 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards. I mean, the Chiefs defense was not any good, and they're a possession away from going to the Super Bowl then, and Patrick didn't get the ball in overtime. I think there's a way to, and you look back on those teams with Steph, you know, before Steve Kerr. I mean, when I was working for the Warriors back then with Mark Jackson, you know, those teams were really good, but they also had some holes in those teams, why they didn't advance to titles, and then they were able to pull out championships. So I think it's more Steph. I do think as far as like
– Yeah, I was trying to think pre-Steph. It's probably more of like a Rose or a Westbrook than someone like a McGrady, just because of the creativeness and the way that – I don't mean like physically their size, but I guess the position, I would think of the point guard a little bit more like the way a quarterback orchestrates stuff and does stuff when things break down.
I would throw in Steve Nash probably.
Yeah, that's a great one. You know what? That might be the best one.
Yeah, I would throw in Steve Nash. I think about him too being, you know, in a market like Phoenix too, and rebuilding that franchise, and then like being an MVP, and a lot of people just never saw it with him, and there was so much about Steve Nash when he entered the league of, you know, is he gonna, you know, nobody really thought he'd be what he was, and I think there's something to be said with that with Patrick. Now I think Patrick, you know, was going to be a first round pick, and he was climbing up the boards. But the fact he went 10th clearly was not a lot of people were 100% sold on Patrick Mahomes as just this franchise transformational player, and he's been that. So it's just amazing too of a player that his style too in college, and then going to the NFL game, and how he just kind of had to transform himself. And there was a lot of conversation about, you know, Steph Curry when he was coming out of Davidson. You know, he was just a shooter, right? He was just a scorer. And everybody worried about his defense and his ball handling and can he stay healthy. And he's been able to answer all those questions, and he's been a champion for it.
Jarrett, how do you balance as a scout, as an evaluator, or if you're broadcasting? I know that measurables are important, and we can't overlook them because guys like Steph Curry – are clearly the exception to the rule, right? Like, there are a lot more guys that look like LeBron James, or maybe not LeBron, but a lot more guys of that stature playing professional sports than there are guys that look like Curry. But with that being said, how do you balance measurables versus not overreacting to measurables and say, oh, Drew Brees 5'11". If he had that extra inch, maybe things go different at the combine. Maybe he's evaluated differently. You don't want to get hung up in hyperbole, but you don't want to get hung up in, you know, half an inch or height with shoes off that could camouflage maybe a really special player.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. It's a great question because, like, as you're asking that, I'm thinking like, well, you know, it's like the Patrick Mahomes to Cam Newton or something. You know, Cam Newton was this just freak athlete, you know, strong, great build, was a very good quarterback himself. But, you know, you can fall in love with those measurable traits. You know, I take it into consideration for sure, but there's so many things that go into an evaluation. It is looking at, you know, size for position, your athleticism, your length, your strength, how much, you know, muscle you can put on and how much, you know, weight you can add if you're, you know, very, you know, frail, thin 19-year-old kid, because that's a part of the development process. I think it's more important on the basketball side to really have the medicals in this conversation, because, you know, you want to make sure that the hips and the knees and the ankles and all those mobility pieces of our game, because that's a big part of our game, is lateral movement, vertical explosiveness. And you want to make sure that a player, you know, hasn't worn himself thin, you know, playing four AAU games in a day. And that's more concerning, I think, when for me, as far as like those type of traits that I think can take away from those measurable components, is guys fall in love with that. And then, you know, can a player have the longevity you want to see in a player and a prospect, especially if you're going to be at the top of the draft. So those things are always being evaluated. I do think the intangibles might be even more important, you know, like the Fred VanVleet of the world, just going off of what Fred did earlier this week to, you know, be an undrafted guy that scores the most points in a game for an undrafted player. And to think about, you know, him coming out of Wichita State, being overlooked, you know, his situational analysis too was so different on those Wichita State teams. I'm just using him as an example, but you know, he's a completely different player at the NBA level. He shoots the ball differently than he did in college. But he had the motor, he had the grit, he had the toughness, he had the love of the game, he had the work ethic, he was a great teammate, he was coachable, he had an IQ. I mean, all those things, he started in the G League, right? I mean, those type of stories you're seeing more and more of. So I think intangibles in our game are so important. I mean, yes, you want to have a player at the top of the draft that has, you know, unique size, athleticism, and measurables, but is skilled, right? I mean, that's the perfect scenario, is you get a player like that that has a ton of skill. And sometimes those players that have those measurables, they're not developed yet from a skill standpoint. And you wonder, do they have the love of it? Do they have the motor? Do they, you know, do they want to be good? Are they going to be patient? Do they want to be great? All those things are a big factor in evaluating a player. And so measurables are a piece of it, but they don't tell the whole story. There's so many things that go into a player's story when you go to evaluate them, especially in the draft.
Yeah, the NBA especially too, so much of what you're just talking about is based on projecting development. And, you know, someone like Patrick Williams, who the Bulls draft, is so young that you're projecting his development and how important and how valuable his age 20 season, 21 season, 22 season. Sometimes guys like VanVleet almost get penalized for the reasons we praise them, and they were so good in college basketball, their senior leadership, their experience, being part of a veteran team like Mizzou has, which we'll get to in a second. So again, it can be tough because sometimes, you know, we salivate over someone's potential and we ignore what someone has actually accomplished, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's like the Malcolm Brogdon story, right? A player that was at Virginia, and you know, you're talking about a player that came from a great system, a great coaching staff. Tony Bennett is just terrific as far as not only development from a skill standpoint, but, you know, his defensive principles, his philosophy, you know, the way his players have to be cerebral. IQ is everything, I think. I mean, you know, we started our conversation with Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has just an unbelievable IQ. I mean, he's probably the smartest player on the field every game, you know, that he plays. Now, obviously, Tom Brady's pretty smart himself from an IQ standpoint and a football IQ standpoint. Tom Brady has his own story, right, coming out of the draft. So, you know, I think, too, sometimes it goes back to you'd love to get a kid at 18 years old. Every scout in our league is going to say we'd love to get a player as young as we can. I personally believe I like getting a player after 1 year in college because they have to go through the human side of responsibility off the floor, going to class, being eligible, you know, development of a person, being able, you know, to take care of your business off the floor. And that's a big part of being a professional. So I think that gives some teaching to that. But yes, when you get a player young, you have that time to develop them. Like we drafted Kyra Lewis, and Kyra, I believe, is going to be a great player. But, you know, we get him young, and, you know, he's got to continue to develop his skill and obviously his body. But you have time now. They're in your system. They're in your structure. They're in your culture. They're around your veterans. And that's a great place for them to be. And so that is always going to be a first and foremost thought. But there are more players now we're seeing that are 3-4 year guys. Maybe they're second round picks that can play a role. I mean, our league is so based off star talent, and you know, you've got to have elite talent to win in our league. It's just so, the skill is so unbelievable and the margin for error is so thin that you do have to have talent to win, period. But you still have to have the foundational structure of culture and teaching and development and the right people in the right place to really grow players and develop players and make sure they're ready to play in your system. And from a cap standpoint, no question. So, you know, I personally love those conversations of players that are older because, you know, again, like a Malcolm Brogdon, his draft story is so unique because he thought he was going to be a first-round pick, a late first-round pick, and then he goes in the second round, and he's got that chip on his shoulder, and that's why he's been successful too. I mean, he's always felt that he's overlooked. That's why he's been a great player in our league, and that's just one example I'm going with. It's just an older player from a great system, a great program. You know, you look at players from the Villanova program, the Jay Wright program. A lot of those players are really successful. Josh Hart on our team is one of those guys. Fulfills a role, very smart, understand what he has to do when he's on the floor. And he, you know, most of those guys know they're not going to be a top number one option, but they know that they can be a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh man off a bench and be completely relied on and valuable. And that those organizations love those type of players because you have to have those players if you want to have success in our league.
Hey, on that note, how have you seen Mizzou's group and Mizzou's last couple of years, the experience they have now, impact them this season?
Yeah, it's great when you have, you know, older players in college. Just touching on that comment of Malcolm. I mean, you know, you have a player like Xavier Pinson, who when he was a freshman, you know, he was kind of a drinking from a fire hose. You know, those eyes were real big, deer in the headlights type of things when he got on the floor and, you know, would try to do too much maybe and was a home run, you know, highlight reel type of player that wanted to make the highlight play and had to learn how to play defense. And I think it's a testament to Konzo Martin. You know, Konzo's had success in his career developing players if they stay, if they commit to what he's doing and they listen and believe in what he's doing. And Konzo's adjusted this year too in a lot of ways, I think, offensively. I think he's done a lot of good things to help his offense. Jeremiah Tillman is another story that is another older player that has broken through mentally. He's more of a cerebral player. He's thinking the game more. It's why he stayed out of foul trouble. You know, that experience to get Drew Smith and Mark Smith and the transfers, you know, those are great pickups, right? I mean, Drew Smith's IQ is one of the best in the SEC. He's probably undersized. He's maybe not the most skilled. He's maybe not the most athletic, but boy, is he intelligent. He's very smart, and he gets the job done. He's super productive for this team. You saw that in the Kentucky game. But I think with Konzo and this team, yes, they're an older team. They're finding ways to win. They're having different guys step up at the right moments. And, you know, we're in February now where you want to play your best basketball. And this team has had some hiccups, the Mississippi State game where they have a lead and then completely lose it in the second half, don't play well in the second half. The Auburn game, going up against an athletic, quick, fast team that gets after you. And this Kentucky team, you know, they got a lot of athleticism and they got, you know, a lot of guys that were high-level recruits. And Missouri wins a game at home and plays well and closes the game with free throws. Drew Smith was great in the game the other night. But I think the success has always been in the identity of this team, and that is defense, toughness, rebounding, grit, and adversity, overcoming that. And they've done a great job. They've stuck together. I think they have a really good locker room that Konzo Martin has always preached, even when he got the job, was making sure that he had the right locker room with the right players in place. And we can go on and on about the Michael Porter, Jontay Porter injuries in those first few years, and Konzo will never make an excuse. But, you know, knock on wood, they've stayed healthy. They've had guys really step into their roles. Even Javon Pickett and Mitchell Smith and Kobe Brown have given them some good things in rotational minutes and off the bench. And they're finding ways to win, and they're playing team ball, and that really can help you when you're in March. This team's going to be in the NCAA tournament. They'll have chances to win, and they're finding ways to win. I think it's a testament to Konzo and his staff.
Who's the best under the radar team you've seen this season?
I mean, under the radar is interesting just because Gonzaga and Baylor are getting so much of the talk. You know, Villanova lost to St. John's last night. Shout out to my former coach Mike Anderson on that win. That was a big win. You know, what Alabama's doing has been.
Shout out to Will Bartlett.
Shout out to Will Bartlett. That's right. Our mutual connection there. Yeah. Congrats to that whole staff. That's a great group. TJ Cleveland, you know, former assistant Chris Huey is a tie over at St. John's. Has been there for a long time. Kansas City native. So really excited for St. John's. But I think like the Oklahomas of the world, the Alabamas. I mean, I think we knew Iowa was going to be this with everybody back and Luka Garza, who just dominates games, is a great, you know, college player. I think Ohio State is another team that doesn't get a lot of talk. So I'm not really giving you one team. I'm giving you a variety of teams. But I still think Gonzaga.
I'll take it.
Gonzaga and Baylor are two of the best teams in college basketball. But Alabama, Oklahoma have been really impressive. You know, I think I'm happy for Shaka Smart in Texas. They've broken through. He needed to have a great year. They're having a really good season. But those two teams at the top are just flat out dominant in Gonzaga and Baylor. I'm happy for Michigan and the job Juwan Howard is doing. that's not really a surprise. They're a very good team. They got a lot of talent. They're getting a lot of good production from their young players as well. So I'll say Oklahoma or Alabama are the two surprises for me in the Big 12 and SEC.
And we get to see Mizzou and Alabama this weekend. Jared Sutton, appreciated, man. Best of luck to you and the Chiefs. And let's do this again soon. Let's talk again in a couple weeks. We'll check in on everything going on in the hoops world.
Let's do it. Thanks, Chris. Hope to see you on a dance floor here soon.
All right, Super Bowl talk. Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders joins us next. It's the Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, is one of the great sponsors of the program and Scoops with DannyMac.com. And right now is a perfect time to learn about a home loan refinance. You hear the word all the time, but maybe you don't even know what you're doing. Essentially, you're redoing your loan. So in terms of your first mortgage, you're retooling your loan. The home loan expert is paying off your current loan and giving you a brand new loan. You can decide the term, 30 years. You can go shorter. Give them a call. Look at your current mortgage and ask the home loan expert, Ryan Kelly, if they can do anything to improve your situation. It all depends on your goal, and they will work with you. But everyone with a mortgage loan can benefit from calling Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, today for a free mortgage analysis. Go to thehomeloanexpert.com, thehomeloanexpert.com. Learn about not just the incredible loan offers that they have, but also the incredible customer service, their customer-first approach that separates them from anyone else you could get a mortgage through. Ryan Kelly is the home loan expert online at thehomeloanexpert.com. Schnucks Rewards, one more reason to love Schnucks. Get the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards. The Schnucks Rewards app allows you to earn points every time you shop for money off your next purchase. But there's so much more in the app to simplify shopping. For instance, you can get exclusive digital savings, including over 100 new digital coupons every week. The shopping list helps keep you organized. Add items on the go, plus you can share it. Recipes in the app make meal planning easy. Search for recipes by ingredients and add them to your shopping list. Go to schnucks.com and check out more about the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards, the Schnucks Rewards app. Download it on the App Store or Google Play. The Schnucks Rewards app rewards you for shopping at Schnucks. Joining us on the program, a man who is very, very busy all the time, but especially this week. Aaron Schatz joins us from Football Outsiders, amongst other places. FootballOutsiders.com is the website. Aaron, what do you miss most about the, I won't call it nonsense, but about all of the stuff that isn't the Super Bowl that leads up to the Super Bowl that we generally spend a lot of time in the collective we spend a lot of time talking about and laughing at and analyzing to some extent on social media?
I mean, I miss covering it, right? Like the last couple of years, I was actually at the Super Bowl and around Radio Row and doing various radio interviews and seeing the rest of the national press, and I miss all those people.
I want you to describe to our listeners what it's like and just the enormity of the event, the enormity of everything that surrounds the Super Bowl.
Oh, well, I mean, it's ridiculous. Last year, just in the Miami Convention Center, the room where Radio Row was set up, you know, they also have these huge physical sets now for like TV shows, like for Pro Football Talk's TV show and for all the various sports networks, ESPN and CBS Sports and
scaffolding Fox everywhere.
And yes. And then as you get later in the week, the later in the week you go, the more famous the people that are walking around, and it just becomes a mob scene.
What was your favorite or what would Aaron Schatz, aside from Football Outsiders, what would be your product that you hawk where, like, you know, you can talk to, Bam Stewart, but he's got to talk about cantaloupe for the first like 90 seconds.
Oh. Probably, stir fry sauce of some sort. I don't know.
Got to get an endorsement deal. Aaron Schatz. Schatz is Schatz Walks, right? Something like that.
Oh, just Schatz Walk. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something I actually use a lot of.
Joe Montana does like pistachios and avocados. I like that the avocado itself just becomes an industry around Super Bowl time, and they're just advertising really for the avocado lifestyle. But things must be going well because they pay Joe Montana to wear his Skechers around Radio Row and do his interviews. And
I believe that's actually the nation of Mexico that's advertising avocados.
It's the entire nation.
Yeah, like their trade department, because most of the avocados come from there.
Ah, I love avocados, and I, for one, will support whomever is trying to continue to encourage folks to eat them. Aaron Schatz is with us. Speaking of football, Aaron, as we get ready for, and speaking of Joe Montana, what's the most overlooked aspect of, I know Brady versus Mahomes, the two quarterbacks don't play each other, but the way this is being billed, kind of as a prize fight, what's the most overlooked aspect of, I guess, the tail of the tape in that sense of what each guy maybe brings to the table?
Oh, the most overlooked aspect of what each guy brings to the table. So not of the game itself, but of what each quarterback is bringing.
If we were stacking their attributes up against each other for this exercise's purpose, give me the most overlooked thing that each one has holstered.
Well, I mean, with Mahomes, it's how good he is on third and long. Kansas City has been our number two team on third and long for three straight years. So while other teams bounce up and down and how good they are, right? Like each year there's one other team that for 16 games has been better than them. But for 3 years, they've been the best offense on third and long, like clearly by a lot. And just how good Mahomes is in third and long is not, I think, as well known as it should be. For Brady, I'm going to go with something negative, which is how poorly he does against the blitz the last couple years. I know you think of Brady and you think of him diagnosing the defense before the play and being prepared for anything, but he's actually been very poor against the blitz for the last like 2.5 years.
As we take both of those attributes, the Mahomes one I'm really interested in, and again, footballoutsiders.com is the website. How much of that also has to do with play calling, especially maybe play calling on second down? We're seeing less of the, you know, run up the middle on second and whatever, just the by the book play, and Kansas City's being comfortable enough to put Mahomes in those positions. Andy Reid not being scared of putting his offense in a third and long position.
Well, they're not scared of throwing it to the sticks on third and long. So many teams on third and long just do some kind of dump off underneath, get a couple of yards and move the punt and play the field position game. And Kansas City does not do that. They throw the ball downfield on third and long. Interestingly, over the last few weeks, Tom Brady has done the same thing. Since the Week 12 game against Kansas City, Tampa Bay has been more aggressive on third downs than they were before. So both teams are looking to move the sticks, even on third and long.
Aaron Schatz with us. What is the roadmap for Tampa to be in a position that they want to be in the third quarter, late in the third quarter? It seems like that is, Aaron, kind of the danger area for everyone. It doesn't matter if the Chiefs are behind, if they're up, but it seems like when they want to, and this is total cliche, but when they want to, they can flip that proverbial switch. It seemed like as soon as the Bills left some points on the table last week or a couple of weeks ago, it was trouble. So what's Tampa's roadmap to avoiding that trouble?
I mean, they want to be up in the fourth quarter, obviously. There's two things. One is they need to bring pressure on Mahomes with just their front four. Mahomes was the number two quarterback in the league under pressure this year. But he still is, you know, like every quarterback, he's better without pressure than he is with pressure. So they need to bring pressure. And they can, especially with Eric Fisher missing the game, the left tackle from Kansas City, who's out with a torn Achilles. Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaquille Barrett can absolutely pressure Mahomes. But the more they can pressure Mahomes, the better. The other thing is, they have to outscore the Kansas City. They need to make big plays downfield, and they're going to have to do something that they don't do very well, and that is get yards after the catch. Tampa Bay is very low in yards after the catch, but Kansas City is very high in the yards after the catch allowed. And so making those big plays into even bigger plays by getting some yards after the catch will definitely help.
Aaron, do you have a favorite stat or a favorite statistic that has emerged, whether it be you know, maybe a or surprising to some extent one, or something you've come across? And I'm sure you've got to develop favorites over the course of seasons or playoff runs or Super Bowl preparation. You have like a mantle with some framed favorite stats of Aaron Schatz's from over the years?
Not really.
Yeah, so give me your favorite nuanced stat that you've come across or the one that maybe keeps coming up when you're doing these.
The most interesting, and I don't think this is predictive at all, by the way, it's just interesting, is the fact that Tom Brady has never thrown a touchdown pass in the first quarter of a Super Bowl, even though he's been in 9 of them.
Sounds like maybe we could position ourselves to make some money on that.
Well, I mean, again, it's totally not predictive. I don't think that it means that they can't do it in this game, but it's really weird.
Well, and I would say that the public, so to speak, slant, like I would imagine that yes is probably a fairly decent favorite. So if we acknowledge that it's closer to a coin flip, then maybe there's some value if you're getting plus odds with no, right?
I think the more interesting one is the first quarter line, because Tampa Bay's defense gets better as the game goes along. They ranked 26th in the first quarter on defense, 16th in the second quarter, 6th in the third quarter, and 1st in the fourth quarter. So they tend to allow points at the beginning of games and then tighten up. So one of the picks that I did in the ESPN Best Bets column for this week was Kansas City minus 0.5 as the first quarter line.
Aaron Schatz, you can check out everything at Football Outsiders. Also, of course, ESPN. Give him a follow on Twitter. Hey, before I let you go, because I know you're a busy man, I'm wondering if you mind. I've been going through, I'm spending some time at my parents' recently, and I'm going through a bunch of old stuff, and I've got just a ton of cards. Let's see here. I've got a big box of football cards. I'm grabbing three of them. These are guys like all 90s guys. I'm just going to throw three names at you, and I want you to tell me what you think of when you think of these players. Don't worry, they won't be like super obscure. These are pretty good cards. All right, you ready?
Hit me.
Ooh, Peter Warrick.
Oh, the first word that comes to mind is washout.
I thought you were going
to
say Dillard's.
Just didn't do well in the NFL.
Okay, I got two more. Ooh, here's a great one. In honor of one of the participating teams this week, Mike Allstott.
Mike Allstott is the reason why DVOA exists.
Really?
Yep. When I was first creating the stat, it started out by just measuring success, and there was no average involved. And I came out with Mike Allstott as the best running back in the league in 2002. And I said, that doesn't make any sense. And the reason why is because he would get the ball in these easy situations, you know, relatively easy situations where teams tended to have success, like 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 on the goal line.
I think in fantasy we call that a vulture, right? He vultures the touchdowns.
Yeah, once you adjusted for the average, then Priest Holmes came out as the best running back, and that made a lot more sense.
All right, I've got one more. Let's see. And I honestly did not know that, and I pulled that out randomly. Oh, this is good. Okay. As a Bears fan, let's go to the mid-90s, and I give you the man, the most popular man in town, the backup quarterback, Jim Miller.
I mean, he was the starter in 2001, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was good. Well, relatively.
All those Bears
speaking,
quarterbacks
right?
Just blend into each other over time, right?
Yeah. Steve Stenstrom to Steve Walsh to Eric Kramer.
Kramer had one incredible year. I think it was 1995. He was fantastic for 1 year.
And Rex Grossman was chucking it around in 2006 when they got to
but he was never fantastic. He was bad in 2006. Yeah. They were carried by their defense. When Kramer was good, Kramer was good.
Yeah, the carriage turned back into a pumpkin at the Super
Bowl
in 2006.
It turned back into a pumpkin. But Kramer's carriage turned back into a pumpkin too the following year.
Aaron Schatz, it's a pleasure, man. Again, footballoutsiders.com is where you go. And pleasure to chat, man. Enjoy Sunday and appreciate it so much. We'll talk soon, man. Be safe.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show.
Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy whatever it is that you're up to. And we'll meet back here on Monday. This has been another week of the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. I'm Chris Raby. Until Monday, saying be nice to each other. And as always, peace.